Welcome in to another episode of the PFF College Football Show. Max Chadwick alongside Dalton Wasserman here, breaking down our top 10 offensive linemen in the 2025 NFL Draft, combining tackles and interior offensive linemen into one ranking for this draft. Dalton, obviously not the sexiest position on the field, but one of the most important positions in football. I'm really excited to break down our top 10 linemen, and not just the top 10 tackles, not just the top 10 interior guys, but combining them into one ranking to really get a true sense of who's the best offensive lineman in the draft.
Yeah, this was tough because I think we have a class that also isn't quite as stacked as it was last year with the offensive line, right? Some of the superstars that we had, you think about Joe Ault, Olu Fashanu, but there's still, I think, some solid players, maybe not as much star talent, and I think you have different types of talents who fit in different schemes, which is what made this a little bit harder to rank, right? I think it leans more towards the tackles than the interior, depending on which tackles are actually staying at tackle. So at the end of the day, we could see this be a very good tackle class and a weaker interior class, or if some of those guys move inside, then it balances out a little bit more. But it was fun to rank them, and especially in the back end of this list, it was kind of hard leaving a couple of guys out of here.
That's another reason why we wanted to do, you know, tackles and interior guys into one ranking, because there are tackles that are probably going to play, a lot of the tackles actually, they're going to probably play on the interior at the next level. So kind of combining them to one ranking and just seeing how we get our rankings from that. Obviously, all these stats we're going to break down today, especially for O-linemen, you can find with a PFF Plus subscription at subscribe.pff.com. Grades, advanced metrics for every player in this year's draft, every player in college football, and every player in the NFL as well, and every team in college football and every team in the NFL. And you get access to our 2025 NFL mock draft simulator. You can draft a full 7 rounds for your favorite team or all 32 NFL teams if you want to do that. And you can trade players and trade picks with that mock draft simulator. All right, Dalton, let's start off with your 10 through 6 and your honorable mention or your sleeper in this class. Who are the guys you have from number 10 through 6?
Okay, so the sleeper, a guy that I think could go maybe in the late second or third round. I really like the right tackle, Ozzie Trapillo from Boston College. I think he could be a solid starter. We'll get more into him in a minute. Number 10, I have Wyatt Milam, who was the left tackle at West Virginia the last few years, but might move inside. So kind of some, you know, ambiguity as far as his position. Number 9, I have the offensive tackle, Ariante Ursary from Minnesota. Number 8, the left tackle from North Dakota State, Gray Zabel, who there's a lot of rumors will move inside, possibly to guard or center. Number 7, Tyler Booker, the guard from Alabama. And number 6, the offensive guard from Ohio State, Donovan Jackson.
All right. My sleeper in this class is Luke Kandra, the guard from Cincinnati. At number 10, I have Donovan Jackson, the guard slash tackle, but a little left tackle this year for Ohio State. At number 9, another guy is a sleeper in this class, but I'm not going to put him as a sleeper because he's one of my top 10 linemen, Holland Pierce from Rutgers. We'll get into him later. I'm a huge fan of Holland Pierce. Ariante Ursary I have at number 8. Tyler Brooker I have at number 7. And I have Wyatt Milam at number 6. So let's get into our sleepers before we dive into headfirst our 10 through 6. Tell me more about your sleeper this class, Dalton.
You know, Ozzie Trapillo from Boston College played right tackle over there, and just he's kind of a throwback, right? Like, I think probably fits better in a gap scheme. They ran a lot of power and counter and gap schemes at Boston College, but he's just got that nasty, old-school, people-moving right tackle feel to him, and he's a really good pass protector, I think, with really nice grip strength. Most of his errors in pass protection, I thought, came more mental errors, getting attacked with stunts and things like that, but you don't see him often get beat around the corner, even though he's not the fleetest of foot. He's more of a bigger guy, again, kind of that throwback right tackle. But I think this is someone who can be a solid starter in the NFL. I don't know that there's a massive ceiling to him, but I think Trapillo, if there's a team in need of just a starting right tackle that's an upgrade of what they already have, or even a guy, maybe even you wait a year on. I think about even the Washington Commanders, say, in round 2 or 3, trying to upgrade that right tackle spot after kind of patchworking it with veterans this past year. I think Trapillo could be a really nice option on day 2.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, he's a versatile guy. He played left tackle and right tackle at Boston College. I'm a big fan of his game as well. He actually was going to be one of my sleepers too, but yeah, I can see him going in the 3rd round as well. So I think he's a really, really good player. And like I said, he's a guy who's been really productive as both a pass blocker and run blocker at Boston College over the course of his career, playing both left and right tackle for them. My sleeper in the class is Luke Kandra, the guard from Cincinnati. Played at Louisville, then went to Cincinnati. Has 3 straight years of 70-plus grades there, above the 99th percentile in our GAS metric, our game athleticism score metric that measures your size, speed, agility, change of direction, all that, using GPS tracking into one. He was a 99th percentile athlete in that metric. Good week at the Shrine Bowl as well for Luke Kandro. Good athlete overall, really consistent technique, and only one penalty in his career on over 2,000 snaps. Now, I think he bends the waist a little bit too much, kind of plays the high pad level, not really a powerful player, so he's probably scheme dependent to his zone scheme. And he has very short arms. His arms are 31 7/8 inches. That's the fourth percentile for guard. So like I said, scheme dependent, probably want him in an outside zone heavy scheme. He's a very good athlete and good technique. He's been a really productive player across 3 years at two different schools in Louisville and Cincinnati. So I like Luke Kandro a lot. I think he's probably going to be a fifth round pick in the draft, but he could be a starting guard in a zone heavy scheme, I think.
I wouldn't be shocked if a team with that scheme gets him even a little earlier than that. You think about a team, say a guard needy team like the Miami Dolphins, I think would be a good bet. Even a team like the Chicago Bears now with Ben Johnson running the system. I know they got Jonah Jackson and Joe Tooney, but Tooney especially is a little bit older. Maybe Kandra's a guy that Johnson can develop behind somebody like Joe Tooney. Have him learn the system, get him a little bit stronger, fix the pad level for a couple of years, and he could be one of those guys who's an early backup who turns into a starter in year three or four. I really like that call out, especially in the right system.
All right, let's get into the two guys that we have, that one of them that's not on my list and one of them that is not on your list. I'll go into my guy first, Holland Pierce from Rutgers. I was surprised by how much I like Holland Pierce. Another guy is probably to go fifth round in the NFL draft, but I think it could be a starting tackle in the NFL and surprise a lot of people because he has a monstrous frame. He's 6'8", 344 pounds, 36-inch arms as well. There are a lot of tackles in this class that have below average arm length, not Holland Pierce. He has 94th percentile arm length. He's a four-year starter for the Scarlet Knights. He's gotten better every single year of his career. He started his career as a walk-on at Rutgers as well. 85.1 grade this past season. That was top 15 in the country. And as you could guess by his size, he's pretty easily the best gap-blocking tackle, I think, in this class. He completely overwhelms defenders with his power and his length. And he showed off pretty good lateral agility, I thought, with his hand usage as a pass protector. And he was very good at the Shrine Bowl as well. Now, not very flexible, obviously, at that size. He kind of shows up a little bit in pass protection. And not the most fleet of foot either at 340-plus pounds as well. But he's going to be a favorite among a lot of teams that run a gap-heavy scheme. He has an elite combination of size and length. It's consistently gotten better over the course of his career. And I think he could be a steal if he falls to the fourth or fifth round like he's projected right now, because I think he has starting potential for a team that runs a lot of gap-heavy schemes. So not a zone tackle, in my opinion, but any team that employs a lot of, you know, man or gap concepts, I think Holland Pierce could be pretty high on their board.
Watching him for a while, I immediately thought of somebody like Trent Brown, who's just that big, massive, maybe even moves over to the right side. He's just that down-blocking just guy. You mentioned it. That's the word. He overwhelms you, right? And I think this year, I thought his feet moved a little bit better than the last couple of years. And you talk about a guy who you mentioned walked on, and when he first met Greg Schiano, he's floating around 400 pounds. So now when you mention he's 345, 350, that's significantly down for him. So I do think Pierce is definitely, I think, maybe even an early day three flyer for a team with that type of scheme who can just keep it simple for him and kind of keep him in the phone booth and you just get him maybe even to lose a little bit more weight, see how much you can take off him, keep moving his feet, get him a little bit quicker. It's something to dream on. I think it's the type for me, it's the type of day three tackle that you go, okay, if this works, it can really, really work, because 6'8", 345, I mean, if nothing else, he's the first guy off the bus. He's the guy that everybody's going to go, oh, man, they have one of those on their team. So, it's a hindrance for him a little bit, the height especially. I think you mentioned the struggles to bend, and I think he struggles at times when pass rushers are dipping their shoulders underneath him. That's really going to be the big thing, is handling those guys with better bend and better speed around the corner. But I think there's something to develop here for sure. You can see his feet getting better. You can see his body getting better, right? And I think this year, the fact that he moved better and got better in pass protection, right? Yeah. That's going to be the biggest thing, is can he pass protect against NFL speed? So to me, I do have him a little bit lower than you do. I think there are some things that are clearly things to work on. I think even a little bit less athletic version. It's a different type, but in the same way that we're going to talk about Ariante Ursary in a little bit, there's something in there. You just have to be able to develop it and fine-tune it a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. This is more me calling my shot on a guy, because I was watching Holland Pierce, and I shocked myself by how much I actually like this guy. So.
And I mentioned Trent Brown. Trent Brown's been a starter for many years now already, right? And he's got to be in the right system, and Bill Belichick knew how to use him, and he was obviously been in Cincinnati the last year or two. So I think there is definitely potential potential there. It's just got to continue to be polished.
So I give you a 2-for-1 special right there. I give you two sleepers in this class because I think both Kandra and Holland Pierce will probably be day three picks in the draft, and I think both of them could have turned into starting caliber players. So one guy that I really was mad at myself for not getting my top pick, I think he is going to be an early second round pick, but it's Gray Zabel, the interior offensive lineman from North Dakota State. We saw him at the Senior Bowl, and he was fantastic. So what do you like about him?
Super athletic. I think that's the first thing, is you think again about these zone schemes and the way he's able to move. And I know the comparison's going to be made maybe with even several guys, but I think how we had Graham Barton last year, kind of that zone blocking center, athletic guy with a little bit of a mean streak that moved from left tackle to center. I think most likely that's where he plays. He probably could play guard in the right system too, and he's got experience at all five spots on the offensive line. So I think if you're getting another one of those teams that's outside zone, I think about the Minnesota Vikings. I think about the Chicago Bears if they were to get him in the second round, if they don't fill their center void in free agency. Zabel becomes a really nice option. The bigger question for me, and he kind of proved these doubts wrong a little bit at the Senior Bowl, but it's just – how strong is he, right? Dominating on the FCS level at every position and being more athletic than those guys. Can he deal with NFL-level strength? And it's the same thing I saw from Graham Barton with the Bucs in his rookie year. Clearly athletic enough to succeed. Clearly has the feet for it. Clearly is willing to run block and be a physical player. Just has to get a little bit stronger. I might need a year or two in the weight room before I see Zabel really become a star. But athletically, even at the FCS level, you can see it. It matches up. And, I mean, he started at left tackle for them this year. His feet are absolutely good enough to make it in the NFL. I think it's just a matter of finding the right position, getting in the right system, and then a year or two in the weight room. I think he could be on that same track as Graham Barton is for Tampa Bay right now.
I like the comparison a lot. Yeah, I see a lot of the same things that you do in Gray Zabel. Like, he was excellent at the Senior Bowl. He showed he could play guard and center, even though he never really played it at the FCS level. He was really good there. And then he's a freak athlete, right? He's a really good athlete, and he dominated the FCS because of it. But like I said, I think the strength concerns were one reason why I didn't have him in my top 10, even though he was right there. Because I do think he's one of the better interior guys in this class. I just don't know if I would take him in the top 40 like he's projected right now. I think that's kind of where I'm at with Gray Zabel.
I think if the Bears, if they don't get a legit center like a Drew Dahlman or somebody in free agency, if they have two picks sitting at 39 and 41, that would be, I think, the ideal spot right there. If he were to fall to either 39 or 41, whichever order they want to do it in, that's somebody I would take if I'm the Bears with one of those two second-round picks.
Yeah, certainly makes sense. All right, let's get to another guy, Dawn, that I have at number 8 on my list, and you have at number 9 on your list. That is Ariante Ursary from Minnesota. So I really like Ariante Ursary. He's a guy that we actually interviewed here on the PFF College Football Show. If you want to check out that interview, he was an awesome, awesome guy. He actually told me that he loves being an artist. He likes to draw a lot. And so that was actually a cool thing that came out of it. He's a really funny guy too. So check out the interview because he's an awesome dude. And he's been an awesome run blocker, especially in his zone scheme over the last couple of years. 89.5 run blocking grade in his zone scheme. 84th percentile among all offensive tackles in the country. He has an elite combination of explosiveness and speed at 330 pounds. He ran a 5.01 second 40-yard dash, 9 foot 3-inch broad jump as well. Very light on his feet. Good hand usage, I think, in pass protection, and good footwork with a strong anchor. Now, I think he plays a little bit of a high pad level right now. He struggles to kind of get to the corner against speedier edge rushers, and he's got a below average arm length, surprisingly, at 33 1/8 inches. He kind of lunges too much and plays off balance a little bit because of that. So there's still work to do as a pass blocker. He only has a 68 true pass set grade over the last 2 years. So there is still work to do there. And he didn't have a great Senior Bowl week either, but he has all the athletic traits you look for in a zone tackle, size and movement ability as well. Doesn't really have great length for the position. He kind of plays a little high-waisted too much, but he could have starting potential, I think. So I think Ariante Ursary, especially as a run blocker, is a guy that I was a big fan of the last couple of years.
Yeah, I do like his technique a lot. And you can tell something, you know, he's got the shorter arms, but something you can tell, he's got wicked upper body strength in his shoulders, right? When he does get a grip, guys are going on the ground, right? Whether it's in the zone blocking schemes, like you mentioned, when he gets extended, because what is it? He was a state champion shot put guy in high school, right? You can tell all that shoulder strength when he does get into that extension. And even in pass protection, when he gets a grip and he doesn't lose that leverage and lose because of that high pad level, when he gets a grip, guys aren't getting by him. So I think the good tape from Ursary is really, really good. Again, you mentioned it. Get him in one of those zone schemes that he's familiar with. They ran it a lot at Minnesota. We're going to talk about multiple Minnesota offensive linemen, I think, throughout this draft process in that same system who can be productive. But Ursary is a guy, if he can overcome the length and the pad level, he could be a really good tackle. I think he's probably a little bit too tall, a little too high cut to play guard. We think standing at 6'6", but we've seen crazier things happen too, right, with guys that size moving inside. So I do think Ursary, little bit to fix. If you can get him to knee bend a little bit more and get that pad level down and work against, you know, lower leverage defenders, then you're talking about a guy who can be really, really good in the right system.
Absolutely. So I have a number 8 on our list. You have a number 9 on our list. Dawn, one guy that you're a little higher on than me is Donovan Jackson. You have it number 6, and I have it number 10. So tell me why you are a big fan of Donovan Jackson.
It's a super high floor for me, right? I don't think Jackson's going to blow people away when it comes to, obviously, he looked really good in the drills at the combine last week, but he's not somebody who's always going to blow you away. He's just an experienced, talented, starting caliber guard, right? And I think there's nothing wrong with taking a guy like that, even early in round 2, if you're a team that needs that. So, you know, again, I think about a team like the Miami Dolphins. I think about the Washington Commanders, you know, especially with Sam Cosmi possibly being out for part or all of next year. I think about teams like that that need a starting guard who has experience in zone. They ran a little more gap. You know, there's been some talk lately about him moving out to tackle permanently. I don't see that, even though he did play really well for Ohio State down the stretch, but just a fundamentally sound player, right? I think all the way around, I can't pick apart necessarily too many weaknesses. I think the bigger thing is that he's just consistently B2B plus. You get the same guy every single week as opposed to an A-plus dominator. That's why he's not on that Quentin Nelson level type of prospect. I think he can do a little better job adjusting back to stunts and things like that in pass protection, but I don't have a ton of gaping holes in his game. I think he's as surefire a starter as you could get in this interior class. I really do. I think that's the part for me, because this interior class does not have superstars. It just doesn't. And I know they're always fishing for them and this and that, but unless, say, maybe Will Campbell moves inside, we'll talk about that debate later. I think if you're just looking at guys we know right now are interior offensive linemen, I think Jackson's the most surefire starter, even if he's not eventually an all-pro.
Absolutely. Yeah, Donovan Jackson's a guy who really did everything for Ohio State this year. He kind of played left tackle, obviously, when Josh Simmons went down. Was a major, major reason why Ohio State won the national championship. Really good footwork, really good technique as well, and honestly a prototype body. 6'4", 315 pounds, got a thick chest, broad hips, and long arms too. And really the intangible stuff too, he is a leader. When Josh Simmons went down, when Seth McLaughlin went down, they needed someone to stabilize that offensive line because they were rough, and that was the reason why they lost that Michigan game. And Donovan Jackson did that against some of the best D-lines in the country, Tennessee, Oregon, Texas, and even Notre Dame as well. He really helped stabilize that offensive line and was, again, one of the biggest reasons why Ohio State won the national championship, because he was a leader for an offensive line that was kind of a patchwork offensive line down the stretch of the season. So scheme versatile player as well. I think he could work in his gap or zone scheme. Now, the negatives with him, like you said, he's never really been a dominant player in his career. He's more sound across the board. Had a 77 grade in 2022, 70 grade in 2023, and 72 this past season. And then also, his grand true pass heads over the last 3 years is only a 58. So he kind of plays with wide hands there, and sometimes he misses blitzes and stunts when you watch him as well in pass protection. But doesn't really have the highest ceiling, like you said before, but he's a high-floor player, really strong intangibles, and good technique too. I think he'd be a solid starter in the NFL.
Yeah, the pass-blocking numbers, I think, this year especially need to be put into context with him playing the second half of the year at left tackle, because if you go and look at it, the one game that's really dragging down his pass-blocking grade this year, I think by about 10 points if you take it out, is the game against Penn State when he's making his first start at left tackle trying to block Abdul Carter, which is just not going to happen because, well, nobody this year could block Abdul Carter, right? So it looks a lot better if you take out that game in the context of what it was. So I do think, obviously, moving back inside. And again, I think this comes to a debate, too, of there are scouts who look more for the ceiling and they want to draft for ceiling and swing for the fences. And there are others who are going to go, hey, that guy's solid. He's going to make our football team at least marginally better. I know what I'm getting out of him. I think that's somebody, for me, that's something I look for too, is how low is the floor on this guy? And I don't think it's low at all for Jackson. I think it's almost surefire that he's at least going to be a decent starter, which I think to have that high probability outcome still brings a lot of value.
No, and you're right, and that is good context for this year, but also in his 2 years just exclusively playing guard in 2022 and 2023, he had a 62 grade on true pass as a 67 pass block grade overall. So still solid pass blocker, but nothing special, even when he's only playing guard as well. So we both have Donovan Jackson in our top 10 as well. Another guy, Dolan, who I am still high on, is Wyatt Milam, the now probably going to play guard from West Virginia. He's a guy who's a 4-year starter for the Mountaineers, 80-plus pass blocking grades in each of the last 3 years, and 80-plus overall grades in each of the last 2 years as well. 91 overall grade at left tackle this past year. That was second in the nation. He was one of only 2 tackles in the country with 85-plus grades as both a pass blocker and as a run blocker. The only other one was Armon Membu, who might be OT1 in the NFL draft for a lot of people, the way his stock is skyrocketing right now. Milam, though, really good balance with a strong anchor, strong hands, smart player, can play a number of positions on the offensive line, can fit in a gap or zone scheme, I think. And also, he had really good marks at the combine with a 30-inch vertical and a 9'3" broad jump as well. Nice explosiveness. Now, he has short arms, very short arms, even for an interior offensive lineman. 32 1/8 inches, that is 14th percentile among interior guys, let alone tackles. Interior guys, that's 14th percentile. A little stiff in his hips, and he has kind of heavy feet and pass protection. Plays on his toes a little bit too much, obviously with the lack of length, and not the best showing at the Senior Bowl either for Wyatt Milam. But over the last few years, he's been one of the best offensive tackles in college football. He needs to play in the interior due to his very, very short arms, but that move could help him because he's not really the best in space either. Scheme versatile player, high IQ, good fundamentals, and he could be a good pro at either guard or center. So I'm still high on Wyatt Milam. I thought his tape was way too good this past season to not have in the top 10, but I do see some people like lowering him on the board just because of the Senior Bowl and the lack of length. But I still think his tape over the last few years at tackle was so good that you need to have him somewhere here.
Yeah, I do actually think with a move inside that his feet can be an asset in the run game. I know they ran a lot of gap scheme stuff at West Virginia, but I think he could transition. You mentioned being kind of scheme versatile. I think he could transition to his own scheme. And the two big weaknesses for him are adjusting, one, to length, and two, to power, right? Yeah. I think those are the two things. Got to get a little bit stronger, and the short arms is just not much you can do about it, right? You can't fix that. You can't get out the stretch-o-matic machine and make your arms 3 inches longer. So, I mean, it's just kind of what you're dealing with, and this is the argument we're having with a lot of guys, right, in this class. We're going to mention it with three or four other guys coming up after this. So, Milam, I do think he's a pretty good athlete. I do think there needs to be a plan for him as far as where his position is going to be, and I think maybe he might not even be a year one starter, honestly. No. Just depending on the team he goes to, how much depth they have, can they develop him and bring him along and use what I think is a relatively above average athleticism to his advantage. I do think his feet can be an asset in the run game. I think his feet play reasonably well in pass protection at tackle, could be even better at guard, but it's always going to be a matter of, again, kind of like Gray Zabel, I have the same thing where, is he strong enough, right? Is he strong enough? Is he long enough? Are those things going to be too much of a hindrance when it comes to blocking NFL rushers?
It's actually really funny, Dalton. The two highest graded offensive tackles in college football this past year probably are not going to play tackle in the NFL. You got Wyatt Milam was number two, and then a guy for next year, Spencer Fano from Utah. He was the highest graded tackle, but I can tell you right now, he's not going to play tackle in the NFL. That guy's going to play guard in the NFL, but he was dominant, and we'll get to him a lot in our coverage for next year's draft, and of course, next year's college football season as well. So Spencer Fano is a name to know for next year. I have Wyatt Milam as my top interior guy in the draft, Dalton, but I think the consensus top interior guy for most people is Tyler Booker from Alabama, who I think I have at number 7 on my list. You have at number 7 as well. Tell me more about Tyler Booker. Why are people so high on him? Why could he be a top 25 pick in the draft?
I've been back and forth on Booker and Jackson as the top interior guy for me. It's just the combine is concerning, and I'm not usually one to take too many reactions out of the combine, but he tested near the bottom in just about everything you could test in over there. And look, it's weird with Booker because watching all 3 years of his tape, I kind of liked his 2022 tape from his freshman year better than the last 2 years. And in pass protection, look, there's no question. He's strong. He's balanced. He is certainly strong enough to play in the NFL. That's without question. But I thought he moved better earlier in his career and was more scheme versatile earlier in his career with his footwork, and it kind of got slower and slower and slower. And then you think about, okay, we've seen a bunch of huge Alabama offensive linemen in the past, right? Alex Leatherwood and J.C. Latham, and we're going to see Jaden Roberts next year too. I mean, we've seen these big Alabama offensive linemen.
Proctor, yeah.
Caden Proctor's another one next year we'll talk about, but sometimes they have a hard time moving, right? Yeah. And I think with Booker, it's become the same way. And the concerning part is, okay, so maybe we expected, all right, he's going to check into the combine at 340 or 350. Checked in at 321. It's not the heaviest guy in the world, right, compared to even some of these other offensive tackles we have in the class. And he still really struggled to move. So I think there's an issue for me. He can pass protect. I don't think there's no question about that. He can pass protect inside. He's strong enough to do it. There's not a whole lot of flaws when it comes to his pass protecting technique, but I just don't feel like his first step, first of all, is slow for me. Especially slower than what I'd seen him do back a couple of years ago in his freshman year when he was moving really well in the zone schemes and getting out in space. It felt like his feet slowed down as time went on, and then it makes him just less scheme versatile. Now, you know, we think about, okay, we've talked about a bunch of zone linemen so far. Now I think about, okay, who could maybe use him to get downhill? Is it the Cincinnati Bengals? Is it maybe the Houston Texans? Is it I'm trying to think of another one even. I don't think a team like the Bears, even if they were still hurting for guards, would take him, especially not at 10 overall, like some were mocking, because it just doesn't fit. The movement skills don't fit. I don't think he's a fit for, say, the Minnesota Vikings. I don't think that's a fit the way he's moved the last year and a half,
like
2 years.
I've seen like Miami or Miami at the top of the draft, San Francisco at the top. Like, it's not going to fit.
It helps your pass protection, but then what are you suffering in the run game? Because his run blocking grades are not great, which is weird for a guy who's so strong at, what, 6'4", 6'5", and 321. So I'm in between on him. I think he's an early second-round pick, maybe in the right scheme fit. Maybe even, let's say, the Baltimore Ravens, right, at 20, I think they're picking 27, to replace Patrick McCary at left guard. That makes sense to me. The Eagles, we've talked about at 32, who run inside zone. It's more downhill, but it would be an easy replacement for a guy like Mekhi Becton, who I think has kind of become a similar sort of player, right? Moved inside to guard, and his feet are a little heavier than they used to be because of all the knee problems. But that's what I think, is it has to be the right fit if you're going to take him late in the first round. Otherwise, if you're taking him just for the pass protection ability, I think he's a second-round pick. He's a good player. He's going to be a starter. It's just going to be the question of how much you get out of him as far as being two-dimensional.
Yeah, I wouldn't take this guy in the first round either. I'm a little bit lower on Tyler Booker. I think, he's more of a second-round type of prospect for me. And to me, it kind of reminded me of, like, when I was watching Holland Pierce. Like, he's like the Holland Pierce of offensive guards, almost, where he is a massive player, 6'5", 321, 34-inch arms. That is 89th percentile for guards as well. 11-inch hands are 97th percentile for guards as well. So he's a guy, especially in pass protection, like you mentioned, he just gets his hands on you and you're not going anywhere, right? Because the grip strength he has, the massive hands and the long arms, 85 career pass blocking grade, 78 career pass blocking grade on true passes. You cannot bull rush this guy. You can't. He has an excellent anchor, good technique, high IQ player. I think he recognizes stunts and blitzes really well as well. Strength to displace defenders in the run game at times. And also, I've heard nothing but amazing comments about his character at Alabama as well. He's one of the hardest workers I've heard in that locker room. Now, I mentioned before, below average athlete. His 10-yard split was 1.96 seconds. That is tied for the third slowest ever by a guard. Broad jump, 7 feet 10 inches, 14th percentile. Bench press, 21 reps, 18th percentile. Now, we mentioned before how strong he is, but he has longer arms, so it obviously is a little bit harder to get his arms up and down, whereas a guy with shorter arms, it's a little bit easier to do that. So he's still a strong player, but that 21 bench reps, at least bench press reps, was a little concerning, at least eye-opening a little bit. And like I said, he's scheme-dependent. I think he can only work in a gap-heavy scheme, so there are going to be a lot of teams that need interior O-linemen. They're not even going to have Tyler Booker on the board, because they were like, he doesn't fit our scheme at all. And I think he has some balance issues that you see at times as well. So certainly not for everyone, but if you run a gap-heavy scheme, you're going to like him a lot as a powerful guard who has been an excellent pass blocker throughout his career. But like I said, with Holland Pierce as well, he's a very scheme-dependent player, but he could be a very good player if you employ that scheme.
It's where you get the lines blurred in a ranking like this, where you're looking for certain type of players, right? Because obviously every player has their strengths and their flaws. But let's say, like for me, I have Tyler Booker 7 and Gray Zabel at 8, right? But if I'm Minnesota picking at 24, I'm taking Zabel over Booker, right? These are the little things. This is how tightly packed these rankings can get. Is it also depends on the type of player you're looking for, right? You know, if I'm sitting here going, okay, the Cincinnati Bengals took Gray Zabel, I don't feel as great about that with them trying to get downhill the way that they do, right? Just as an example. So it really does. It blurs the lines. It depends what you're looking for. Even depending on the system fit, you might want Booker over even Donovan Jackson. That's again, we're talking about a very different set of players, right? You have to evaluate Booker a little bit differently than you would Zabel, or even, you know, somebody say, like I mentioned Ozzie Trapillo before, and you go, okay, where does he fit best? And it stresses the importance of how much so few guys in every draft class are at the very top of all 32 teams' lists, right? And I mean, that's where you get the elite players that are taken in the top 20, right? They're scheme proof and they're team proof, and they can go anywhere and they'll be great. You think about, say, like Penei Sewell, right? Could have gone to any of the 32 teams, he'd have been great.
Yeah,
that doesn't matter, right? It happens that he went to the Lions and he became great anyway. But I think that's where you get into, especially when you're talking about second-round linemen, the fit is so, so big, and it's going to be huge for Booker.
just to kind of spoil some of the plans here at PFF, along with Trevor Sekhoma, we're going to be doing a team-specific big boards as well. So if you're a team that uses a very specific scheme, there are going to be players that you're just not going to be interested in the NFL draft. So obviously, you know, these rankings are good just for broad scope, like who are the best all linemen in our opinion. But later on, hopefully in April, I think, Dawn, I think we're going to be doing, what, top 100 for every team?
I think we're going to try to it. And that's the most fascinating part of all of it to me. Even when you hear all the rumors and speculation at the combine, is okay, what are these 32 teams actually thinking on the inside, yeah, right? That's why, you know, it was almost fascinating to watch, like, the Giants Hard Knocks last year when it was like, okay, what are they thinking within this process? Or even the quarterbacks, what do they think about which quarterbacks they actually like better and fit their system better? So it's something always to take into account once you actually get to draft night, is okay, where does he land and why does that make sense? And in this, in doing just in a vacuum rankings, it's actually hard to me, it makes it harder to do,
yeah,
right? Especially with the back end of this list where I'm like, well, I'd like this one better here and that one better there, and it would fit, it would all, and then it's just to do it in a vacuum, it's tough, it really is.
So I'm excited for those teams specific big boards. That'll be, I think, a lot more context. That'd be good for, because I think there's some people who might be a fan of a team that drafts a player that, you know, on the big board is lower than another player, but you're like, oh, wait, he actually fits your team better. That's why you draft
him. Guess what? We're here to tell you all why. So
I'm excited to do that. So that'll be really fun. Hopefully get that done in April, and we'll, of course, have it for the NFL draft and the live draft show as well. Before we get to our top five offensive linemen, the same five guys for both of us in slightly different orders in the NFL draft, we've got to talk about the sponsor of the show. That is Fabric by Gerber Life. What does your child's future success look like to you? A job they're passionate about, traveling around the world, or just being happy and comfortable? Whatever their journey, you can help make it easier to achieve with a kid's investment account from Fabric by Gerber Life. By making contributions to your child's future today, you can help give them the means to pursue their dreams, big and small. Fabric by Gerber Life is designed by parents for parents to make it easy to plan for and manage your family's financial path. With a kid's investment account from Fabric, you can start investing in your child's future today. It's all online, and setting up an account can take you just 5 minutes. Then you can manage your child's account and monitor their investments right from your phone. Start with just $20 with no contribution limits, tax advantages, and your funds are SIPC insured up to $500,000. Plus, no commission fees, and it's just a low, flat monthly maintenance fee. Unique gifting lists can be shared with family and friends, so instead of more stuff, they can help grow your child's investments for their future instead. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to help protect their family. Start investing in your child today at meetfabric.com/PFFcollege. That's meetfabric.com/PFFcollege. meetfabric.com/PFFcollege. Portfolios managed by Fort Washington Investment Advisors Incorporated. Additional services provided by Apex Clearing Corporation. All investing is subject to risk. Learn more at meetfabric.com. All right, Dawn, top five offensive linemen in the 2025 NFL draft. We both have the same guy here at number five on our list. It is Josh Simmons, the offensive tackle from Ohio State. So I'll take the lead on this one. I like Josh Simmons a lot. He has elite flexibility for the position. He's able to slide and mirror defenders while having good pad level. Was really playing elite ball this past year before going down with an injury. 82 grade on true pass sets in kind of half a season this year. Good hand usage, balanced footwork, good core strength. He's a 94th percentile athlete in our gas score. Now, why is he number five, not a little bit higher? Because I see a lot of people have him as OT2, OT3, maybe even OT1 in this draft. I think context is really important with Josh Simmons. He has less than half a year of elite production, and that came this year against really easy competition. He played Akron, Western Michigan, Marshall, Michigan State, Iowa, and then less than half of the Oregon game. He went down early on in the second quarter of that Oregon game with his torn patellar tendon. And also, you might hear that and say, wait, you played Marshall. Mike Green's at Marshall. So that means if he had a good grade there, that means he has to have he's a really good player. Mike Green only played, I think, one snap as a pass rusher against Josh Simmons. He lined up primarily over the right tackle for Ohio State in that game. And then across 2022 and 2023, at Ohio State and San Diego State, where he transferred from, he had a 62 grade across his 2 years. It wasn't like he had, you know, elite tape from the 2 years before either. Obviously, I mentioned before, torn patellar tendon, but he did say he should be good to go in mid-April for his own pro day, which is good, very good news for Josh Simmons. I don't think he'll ever displace defenders in the run game. Not really a strong player. He's got a 58.9 career run blocking grade and 33-inch arms as well, which is 12th percentile for tackles. I think Josh Simmons is one of the biggest boom or bust prospects in this draft. His pass blocking tape this year was elite. But like I said before, it came in 5.5 games against very, very easy competition. He has traits that you want to bet on, and I completely understand why he's projected as a first-round pick. But the production, I think, is severely lacking when you compare it to the other top tackles that Dalton and I will get to in our 4-1. They have production that is just, I think, way better than what Josh Simmons has right now.
The best way I can put this is Simmons' good tape is really good. The good tape is really good. There's also a lot of inconsistent in his game that we've seen going back to his time at San Diego State and then at Ohio State. I think you mentioned it, more of a finesse player who wins with his footwork. This, you know, occasionally he's got a mean streak on the second level because he can get to those linebackers pretty easily with his footwork, with his athleticism. But I need to see him explode out of his stance a little bit more on the first level when it comes to run blocking. I think his hand usage and pass protection could be better. This is a raw player. Look, and I think, is there a chance he could be really, really good with better coaching and even more polish on him? Absolutely. He's still young. He's still very athletic as long as he comes back from the knee injury. But you mentioned it. It's inconsistent for me. I think that's the big thing. A finesse player who is at times inconsistent, especially with regards to power and strength, I think there is more of a gamble here than there is with the four guys that we have ahead of them, right? And he's probably more talented than, say, a Josh Connerly, or he's as talented as maybe – he might be as talented as, say, a Kelvin Banks, but he has to put it together on a snap-for-snap basis. And he's the guy that you wish could have played through the entire way with all those great defensive lines that Ohio State faced, right? Penn State, Michigan, Tennessee, Texas, even Notre Dame. Like, you would have loved to see him play against that competition. Because if he were to dominate the way he was first half of the year against the softer competition, then you're talking about, holy hell, this guy could have been a top 10 pick, right? If he were to dominate, but we don't get to see it. There's also the chance that, okay, we didn't get to see it. Maybe it's a struggle. Maybe it's still middling grades, and he could have dropped down further. Now, because he got hurt, we're riding in between on this. So it's kind of the way we have to go. I'm just not as sure on Josh Simmons as I am with the four guys that we have ahead of him. And that's really the best way I can put it. Boom or bust, if a team takes him late in the first round and they go, look, we think the potential's all there, we think we can get to that ceiling, then absolutely take him. If you have a plan and you have a plan to get to that ceiling and you can use that athleticism to your advantage, he could be a great player. It's just a matter of, we just haven't seen him consistently be that great player yet.
He was such a complicated guy to watch for me, at least, because when I was watching him, you see the grades and all that. Like, there are times, obviously there are a lot of times, when guys just, something clicks for them, right? And they become an elite player after having, you know, middling years before that. That could have happened with Josh Simmons, right? The elite tape that we saw in the first half of the year could have been something he just continues throughout the entire season. But because he got hurt, it's now more complicated because, okay, did he actually become an elite player? Or did he have elite tape against really bad competition? That's the question. If he played like elite competition at the beginning of the year and had that tape, I'd be like, okay, maybe that was something that just clicked for him and he's going to be that all year. But the fact that it came against very, very, you know, a lot of Group of Five teams and not really great Big Ten teams either, that's where it's a problem for me. It was like, okay, I don't know what's real and what's not real with Josh Simmons. The fact that his, you know, tape at the year before at Ohio State was very inconsistent. The year before at San Diego State, I thought was not good at all. I don't think he was a very good player at San Diego State the year before that either. It makes it very complicated. Again, I understand why with the traits that why you want to bet on him in the first round, but with the injury and the fact that his tape this year kind of came against relatively easy competition, I'm a five in this list, and honestly a distant fifth compared to the other four guys.
I think it is. I understand, again, if you're a scout taking the ceiling argument and that's more important to you in this process, then I get why Simmons is higher. I do get it, but it takes projection, and that's the fun part about all of this, is there are certain players where you go, okay, some guys, you know what they are right now. This is what I talked about with Donovan Jackson earlier. I know exactly what Donovan Jackson is. I think he's one of the safest players to project in the entire draft. We're going to get guys like that. Then we're going to get guys like Simmons, who you go, maybe a little more of a lottery ticket feel. And I understand if you think of it in that scope, and I want the best players with the most potential, Simmons will be higher than five.
Yeah.
And that's why even Trevor has him higher than OT5, right? And it's like what he can be, but you also have to understand you better have the process right in the development for what he can be in getting there. So right now, is he the safest pick? No. Is that why I have a couple other guys ahead of him? Yes, but there is certainly talent to work with. It's that balance of finding, you know, okay, this is what we need to do with this guy and having this process to get there.
It's funny that, you know, the guy who is maybe the safest player in our top 10, you know, was the replacement for Josh Simmons at left tackle. And then Josh Simmons, of course, the biggest boomer bust guy, was the original left tackle for High State. So yeah, both coming from the left side of the offensive line, the safest player at offensive line, and maybe the biggest boomer bust guy in the offensive line as well. Don, another guy who is at number 4 for both of us on this list is Josh Connerly Jr. from Oregon. What'd you like about him?
See, this is one where I go, okay, if you want a safe starter with maybe a little lower ceiling than a guy like Simmons, then you go ahead and take Josh Connerly. This is, I think he's just a solid football player. Good feet that I think mirror well in pass protection. Just keeps moving. Doesn't give up on plays. Got enough athleticism and I think enough strength to fit really in any scheme. You know, and I even think about, you know, if he's available at 31 for the Kansas City Chiefs, this is someone I would take. I think this is a safe bet to be a solid starter in the same sense that I talked about with Donovan Jackson. I think the main issue that he has in pass protection is just when he doesn't use his hands properly and guys get up in on his chest, especially guys with longer arms. I think that can be an issue at times for Connerly, but I like his athleticism. I like his all-around game. I like his experience in kind of a multiple run scheme over there at Oregon. I think he's a relatively safe player to call a starting left tackle, right? So for me, if I'm somebody who values high probability outcomes and values kind of low risk and guys who can help me in the immediate as a starter, I'm taking Connerly over Simmons because I feel like if I have him, let's just say, take the Kansas City Chiefs. That's a perfect example at 31. If they don't sign Ronnie Stanley, desperately need a left tackle, biggest weakness on the whole team, right? For next year, would you rather have Connerly or Simmons?
Connerly, yeah.
Right. This is where I'm at, right? And I get it. If they want to take the home run swing on Simmons in that sort of hypothetical scenario, then cool. But for me, Simmons is someone who either you have to be willing to wait, even if you get some rough reps as a starter, or you have to sit him behind somebody and get him to learn for a year and even recover from the knee as well, right? Whereas Connerly, I think he's plug and play. Somebody in the 20s or 30s is going to take him. He's going to be their starting left tackle.
That's why I really like Connerly to the Chiefs, especially over Simmons, because the Chiefs already took a home run swing last year and Kingsley Sumatia.
Their windows open every year. Yeah. That's the big thing is they need players, and this is why they're going to look at Ronnie Stanley, but even if you're looking inside at guard and they move Kingsley inside to guard, are we sure?
Yeah.
Right? And then would we be looking at guards? Would we be looking at a guy like Donovan Jackson instead if they got Stanley and trying to get that high floor starter? That's the difference is team situation.
Yeah, exactly. Because Kingsley was one of the biggest boom and bust prospects last year. I would not take Josh Simmons for them either because it's like all of a sudden if you take Josh Simmons and then your plan is either Simmons or Kingsley at left tackle, well, what if they're both struggling left tackle? Then what are you going to do?
Or if it's Simmons at tackle and Kingsley inside at left guard. That's been also something that's been rumored to be maybe a possibility. If you have those two guys who you go, oh, we're swinging for the fences, well, you swing for the fences, you're going to strike out a good percentage too.
Yeah, exactly. So I like Connerly a lot as well. He's a quick tackle, very explosive player, can get upfield in his zone scheme, can mirror speed rushes really well as well. 87th percentile 40-yard dash at 5.05 seconds. Quick hands to fight defensive linemen. He has good competitive toughness as well and an 83 pass blocking grade over the last 2 years. Now, I think his game kind of lacks anticipation and timing right now. There's a lot of times where stunts I saw work against him a little bit. Also, he's not the strongest tackle either right now. I think his hand placement and his timing needs a little bit of work. Too often defenders get into his chest. Below average arm length as well, 33.5 inches. Won't really displace defenders in the run game too much, but got all the movement skills you want in a tackle. Good enough size, good enough length as well. He needs to improve his anticipation and his strength, but he's still a very young player at only 21 years old. And I think in a zone scheme especially, he could be a long-term starter in the NFL. So I'm a big fan of Josh Connerly Jr., and I think he's well worth a first-round pick in the NFL draft. And like you said, he's a very high floor player in any team that's competing for Super Bowls right now that need a left tackle. Like you think about the Ravens, if they lose Ronnie Stanley, the Chiefs, if they don't get Ronnie Stanley, if there's any team that does not get Ronnie Stanley, essentially, you're looking at Josh Connerly.
Pretty much. And those are the two teams that I would be looking at. Absolutely. I think he would fit in both. And I think that's a big thing for me with Connerly too. I think he would fit in at least somewhat just about anywhere. I don't think it's so heavy where it has to be in one scheme or the other. I think he's a pretty translatable plug-and-play starter, and you mentioned it for whichever team doesn't get Ronnie Stanley, and another big factor was Alaric Jackson going back to the Rams. Yep. He was someone I think the Rams would have looked at, but Jackson is back with the Rams. They don't need a left tackle now, so it's going to be interesting, I think, in that mid to late first-round range where Connerly ends up.
So we both have Josh Connerly Jr. at number 4. Another guy we both have at number 3 is one of the biggest rising stars in the NFL draft right now. That is Armon Membu from Missouri. Turned into one of the best tackles in America as a junior. So I mentioned before, Wyatt Milam was one of 2 tackles in the country with 85-plus grades as both a pass blocker and run blocker. The only other one was Armon Membu, 90.6 overall grade. You see right there, that was 3rd in the nation behind Spencer Fano and Wyatt Milam. So really, of guys who are going to play tackle in the NFL, Armon Membu was the highest grade tackle in college football this past year. Has the flexibility, the coordination, the balance that you look for in a tackle, elite combine as well. So we're going to get to the stat for another guy later on in this list, Dawn. There have been 4 offensive linemen since 2003, so over the last like 20 plus years, that came into the combine at over 315 pounds, and then they ran a sub 5 second 40 and a 30 inch vertical. Armon Membu, Will Campbell, Trent Williams, Tristan Wirfs.
Good players.
Those were the only 4. So Armon Membu is in elite company right there for just how elite of a combine he did. And like I said before, he was one of the best tackles in the country this past year. Explosive out of his stance, as you can see by those numbers as well. The arm length is, again, a little below average at 33.5 inches. It's not going to keep him from playing tackle in the NFL, but it's a little below average. Struggles against power rushers at times. Needs to get a little bit stronger, I think, and finish more blocks. And, again, only 1 year of elite production. Like, if he kept this up for 2-3 years, then I'd be talking about him with Calvin Mix, Jr., Will Campbell. We'll get to those guys in just a second. But only 1 year of elite production at Missouri. But, listen, he was one of the biggest breakout stars this college football season and one of the biggest breakout stars now in this draft process and will likely be a top 15 pick because of it. All the athletic traits you look for in tackle. And, honestly, he's a very young player. Could only be scratching the surface of his potential if he can get a little bit stronger as well. So I completely understand. I've seen a lot of talk about Armon Membu might be the first offensive lineman off the board, might be a top 10 pick overall. I get it, but I still would take the 2 guys ahead of him above him, but I still like Membu a lot.
I think considering, one, he was the highest graded right tackle in the country this year and everything he can do at such a young age. Look, to me, I'm with you. I think his base is excellent. I think his lower body, I think his legs are very, very strong. I think it's hard to get through him when he's in form. I think the only thing I really have on him is, to me, his hands kind of set up sometimes a little low and wide, and there's too many guys that get access to his shoulder pads, and no matter how strong you are, if guys have access to your chest and your shoulder pads, you have an issue, right? But you talk about, especially, first of all, I look at just the range. To me, I look at the range 9 through 16, okay? When you talk about the Saints, the Cowboys, the 49ers, the Dolphins, and I don't think he would get any lower than 16 to the Cardinals if somehow all those other teams passed him up, right? Especially with the zone scheme that Missouri ran. We talked about this with Javon Foster last year when he got drafted on day 3. We're like, look, he goes to the right scheme. This could be a good player. Membu's even way better than that and younger. It took him a lot shorter time to get where he needed to get to the production of Foster's level. So the question that I find interesting about this too, let's say the Miami Dolphins at 13, they have a right tackle in Austin Jackson, right? So is Membu a guard, or do we think, you mentioned Tristan Wirfs as one guy who moved from the right to the left side. I think about now last year, Membu I think is better than this player, but Tyler Guyton, who was the right tackle right at Oklahoma and the Cowboys moved him to the left side. Now didn't have a great rookie year. Again, I don't think he's the same level prospect as Membu, but if he's capable of flipping over, and he's clearly athletic enough, I think that's been proven, especially at the combine, then I think it opens even more options for him as far as what teams he could go to. I certainly think about Miami at 13 there and go, okay, this is the type of guy, if you're going to lose to Teron Armstead, this is what you replace him with, especially the way you want to run the football. So he's going to have options. I don't think he's going to go all the way up at 4 to the Patriots. Unless, yeah. I mean, they're going to have to believe he's on that level. You just mentioned what I think 2 future Hall of Famers in Trent Williams and Tristan Wirfs. He would have to, if they think he's on that level, fine, take him at 4. I think it's much more likely somewhere between 9 and 16, those 4 or 5 teams I'm looking at, and I go, you're not all going to pass on him. Yeah. And certainly not if he gets all the way to 16 for the Cardinals and they could have him and Paris Johnson as their 2 tackles. They're living. They are absolutely living. So, no, it just a fantastic player, and I think this, to me, just one of the more fascinating players as far as the number of different scenarios where he could end up, as far as both team and position. But, boy, there's a base to work with, and he's only about to be 21 years old.
Also, I love that everyone's kind of coming around to the fact that right tackles are just as valuable as left tackles.
Right tackles are people, too. Don't get it wrong. If there's two people I'm going to defend on this show or the NFL show, right tackles and slot corners. Yep. Those are my guys right there.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, San Francisco at number 11 overall, you get Trent Williams on the left side or my member on the right side of that zone scheme. That'd be – like I said before,
oh, with Dominic Pouni sitting right there inside him too. I mean, you're talking about, and again, it's the same argument I've made with one of our next two guys on the list is eventually Trent Williams is going to retire, I think, right? And then we think about, okay, do we flip it over? And it's, look, it shouldn't be, for some guys it's harder than others, but even Penei Sewell was a left tackle in college. He moves to the right side because you already have Taylor Decker. It shouldn't be that hard. For some guys it's harder than others, but that's where I'm curious to see with Membu, how many options does he have in this draft? Is he just a right tackle? Is he going inside? Is he playing left tackle? There's going to be a lot of speculation going in of like how each team could use him, but I think he's going top 16.
So far in our top five offensive linemen, Dalton and I have the same number 5, the same number 4, and the same number 3, but we disagree on number 2 and number 1. So Dalton, who is your number 1 offensive lineman in this year's draft?
Number 1, and look, honestly, I can flip a coin. I'm not really staunch in either side of this argument. I went Will Campbell from LSU number 1, and I think, look, purely as a tackle, as a left tackle, I think Kelvin Banks Jr. could eventually be better, or maybe even better right now. But Campbell, the fact that he's so just mentally adept when it comes to protections and everything that goes along with the mental side of playing offensive line, and the fact that he gives me options, right? We've talked about and mentioned, okay, maybe as a guard because of the arm length, but we still feel like he can be really good, right? Trevor's even mentioned him at, you know, I think this guy could play center and be an elite center.
Yeah.
That's fine. Look, if he's just a great offensive lineman, fantastic. I do think Kelvin Banks, I would like him to stay at tackle. That's just me personally. I think he can do it. But the fact that Campbell gives me options is kind of a tiebreaker here. Really, for me, it's kind of 1A and 1B. This is so close. Slightly different skill sets, slightly different builds. Both really good athletes, obviously, so that's not a big issue. You know, the talk of the town, I've never seen arm length talked about as much as it's been talked about this year. Maybe I'm just new to that game or what. But look, Campbell, he's a strong player. He's been doing it since his true freshman year. Really smart, can adjust on the fly, finds work when he's not occupied, gets to the second level, an absolute mauler. When he gets you on the sled, well, you have a problem. And look, I would have liked to have seen more diversity when it comes to LSU's run game. That's a whole different argument we'll have later. But when he does get guys on the sled, his legs, man, oh, man, his legs can put you on your ass. I mean, that's just where it's at with Will Campbell. You know, I think you mentioned it. The length is one thing. I think his hand setup and pass protection sometimes can be a little bit low, and he can have trouble dealing with more powerful defenders. I go back to matchups with Jared Verse at Florida State, or even say a Chris Braswell from Alabama, guys who are a little bit more power rushers that he's got to deal with. But as far as finesse and footwork, and I think even lower body strength, man, I don't have a huge problem with it. And I know some people talk about, too, the high stance that they teach at LSU, and just it's – I think the adjustment to the NFL is not going to be that hard for Campbell, and he gives you a ton of options, right? If the Bears, if they want to go first round with this instead of Gray Zabel in round 2, if they don't sign a center, a Drew Dahlman, somebody in free agency, if Campbell's there at 10, you take him to play center?
Yeah.
It's a thought. The fact that you have that option, because you're not going to do that with Banks. Mm-mm. That's not going to be a thing with Kelvin Banks. So the fact, I think, look, to me, they're like this. These two are so tight. They're a little bit different. The fact that Campbell gives me more options is a tiebreaker, but they're both fantastic players, and I absolutely love them.
I'm with you. I think it really is a coin flip between the two of them. I mean, this is a guy in Will Campbell who started left tackle since his true freshman season at LSU. He actually has the patch of number 7 on his jersey. So the number 7 at LSU is obviously very, very famous. All the best players that had played at LSU wear that number. He can't officially wear that number as an offensive lineman because it's not legal in the NCAA rulebook, but they gave him the patch and saying, hey, if he could, he would wear number 7 because he's that kind of leader and that kind of player for LSU. 85th percentile true pass set grade in his career. You mentioned it, Dalton. Such a smart player, man. He makes protection calls pre-snap from left tackle. Usually you see the center making protection calls. It was Will Campbell making those calls at left tackle. His footwork, his balance are elite. Always seems to be in control. Really good hand usage, quick and precise. And like I said before, the athlete athleticism at the combine with he and Armand Membu and Trent Williams, Tristan Wirfs, the only four offensive linemen who are 315 plus pounds, sub 5 second 40, and 30 inches in the vertical since 2003. So that's elite company right there. Now, the big question with Will Campbell is the arm length and the wingspan. So the wingspan is 77 1/8 inches. That would be the shortest ever for a tackle. The arm length is 32 5/8 inches. It would be 7th percentile for tackles. So the lack of length kind of leaves serious question marks on whether or not he can be a tackle or if he needs to kick inside to guard or even center. And also his length, it shows up in the run blocking a little bit. He kind of plays out on his toes a little bit too much against the second level guys. Not the most flexible guy either. Sometimes struggles to protect his outside shoulder. And he plays a very narrow stance and high pad level a little bit at LSU. But almost everything you look for in a franchise left tackle, Will Campbell's got it with the high IQ, with the athleticism, with the fundamentals. The only thing is the length, and whether or not you think that'll keep him from playing tackle is really up to you. But while he might have to be going inside the next level, he has a really high floor at really any of the five positions on the offensive line due to 3 years of excellent tape and high IQ combined with fundamentals. So again, like Dalton said, I think he is a very, very high floor player. Maybe he has to play guard or center, but even if he has to play guard or center, I think he's going to be a damn good guard or center in the NFL.
I keep throwing the example out there because it feels obvious to me when it comes to mock drafts is at the Bears. What if Ben Johnson sees him as just, okay, maybe I can, he's like my Frank Ragnow type. Like, what is wrong with that? If you're talking about, you know, to me in the top 10 or 12, okay, what if you drafted a top three center in the NFL? I don't think that's an issue with the way offensive linemen are getting paid, and it feels like every good team's got a great offensive line and a good center. We saw it with Jason Kelce all his years, Creed Humphrey in Kansas City. He's one of the most valuable players in football. I think about Tyler Linderbaum, right, in Baltimore. It's valuable. I know that the flash and the glitz and glamour is all about tackles, but at a certain point, I think what the right teams do is just – get five really talented offensive linemen, and they can figure it out if they're of that caliber. So I think, again, if you have Banks, cool. You do. I mean, I get it. We'll talk about Kelvin Banks here. But Campbell giving me options, I think you're just talking about a really darn good offensive lineman as opposed to – I think we're getting more and more away from this guy has to play this one spot, yeah. Right? Get talent in the room, figure it out. Because there aren't enough good offensive linemen to go around for everybody in the NFL. So if you just keep stacking them and figure it out, they will be good.
Absolutely. All right, number one for Dalton is Will Campbell. I have number two in the draft. My number one offensive lineman in the draft, and Dalton's number two, is Kelvin Banks Jr. from Texas. He was the most valuable power four tackle this past season. Has been an excellent pass blocker over his entire career. 90.7 pass blocking grade over the last 2 years. 86 pass blocking grade and true passes over the last 2 years. That's 96th percentile. Powerful lower body. You can hold up against bull rushes. And he has the foot speed and the balance to mirror speed rushers. Also, what I loved about Kelvin Banks Jr., especially this year, he was elite against elite competition. Against Michigan, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, Clemson, Ohio State, and two games against Georgia. All those schools have like elite defensive lines, 86.9 PFF grade. That'll against do. Those schools. So he has been a fantastic player against elite competition. Why I have him above a guy like Josh Simmons, he's proven it against the best players in the country. 93rd percentile gas score, career high 81 run blocking grade. He's a natural athlete in a zone scheme who can get to the second level. And also, his arm length and everything has been talked about a lot. His wingspan was in the 82nd percentile for tackles. And Mike Renner even pointed this out too. He's like, I look at wingspan more than arm length for tackles. I think that matters more because your wingspan is when you're going like this, trying to go side to side. Arm length, I believe they registered like this. So you're not really putting your arms up that much as a tackle. You're putting it like this with a wingspan. His wingspan was 82nd percentile, but his arm length, 33.5 inches, that was 26th percentile for tackles. And really his grip strength isn't the best to maintain blocks, but has been an elite left tackle for Texas. He's been starting since his true freshman year, just like Will Campbell at left tackle for Texas. Arm length isn't ideal, but he's got the wingspan, the athleticism to hold up a tackle, and he's proven himself against elite, elite competition, and he's an ideal fit in a zone blocking team. A lot really similar to the conversation I think we had last year, Dalton, with Olufashinu. That's why it kind of reminded me a lot of Kelvin Banks Jr. And for anyone who's talking about Kelvin Banks Jr.'s arm length and, oh, why that maybe that's why he has to play tackle the next level, he's the same arm length as Armand Membu, the same arm length as Josh Connerly Jr. He's got longer arms than Josh Simmons, longer arms than Ariante Irisarry as well. So you're talking about arm length for Kelvin Banks Jr. Well, it's the same, if not better, than a lot of guys who are not even being talked about as potential guards at the next level. So I don't understand the arm length concerns with Kelvin Banks Jr. at all. And I think we're kind of picking and choosing who we're actually concerned about arm length with and who we're not. I think Banks, to me, is the number one tackle easily in the draft, just because Campbell, there's at least is some concerns whether or not he can play tackle. I have really no concerns about Calvin Banks Jr. I think he might be a top 10 prospect for me in the draft.
I mean, I think any of them. I think Campbell, I see, this is where I was at with Peter Skoronski even a couple of years ago. Yeah. Let him prove he can't do it then. Yeah. I mean, that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at with Campbell. That's where I'm at with Banks. I mean, even Membu. I mean, let him play tackle and see what happens. They've been playing tackle their whole life. But no, Kelvin Banks, I think the prototype for what any of those same teams that I talked about with Membu and the outside zone blocking and the pass protection. I think when you talk about the 49ers, the Miami Dolphins, I think if he were to get this far, to say Seattle at 18, I would take him in a heartbeat and figure it out later. But no, I think you've seen him prove at left tackle at a big-time program against great competition, especially this year, the SEC, and in the playoff where it's like there's not a ton of – he gets caught leaning a little bit. I think sometimes he's trying to find that balance between measuring a guy up and going for the kill shot. But look, he's a wicked athlete. I think he's – again, I keep going back to this. I think San Francisco at 11.
Yeah,
I think how I don't think, and if they like Membu better, fine, because you have a kind of a similar player on the other side of, you know, of the line of scrimmage. But that's where I look at, and I know, look, arm length, you mentioned it. I've never heard about it more than in this draft. It's been talked about with every single offensive tackle in this draft. Does he have long enough arms? And I just look at a guy like Kelvin Banks. Like, oh, he's been too good for too long not to have him at tackle. I think it very well could be that he is, if they're both playing tackle, he may be the better tackle than Campbell. That's how tight this is. And it, again, depends on what type of player you're looking for. But I think Banks is another one. I don't think he's getting out of the top 16.
No.
I don't think there's any way even, again, if Arizona felt like taking him and moving him over to the right side and maybe tweaking the schemes, they mix up their schemes a little bit. But, no, I mean, it just feels like we've been watching him for so long and calling him the best left tackle in college football this year especially. I don't think he's dropping very far, regardless of whatever measurements teams want to nitpick.
It feels like this happens to a lot of guys in every draft, just the fatigue, right? Because Calvin Banks Jr. immediately, I think it was one of his first games of his career, was against Will Anderson Jr., and he held up really well. And since that point,
I think we have it with Campbell too, right? Yeah. We've been watching him just be great for 3 years,
yeah,
right? I mean, ever since
and he, now we're nitpicking now.
Wasn't he the first ever true freshman left tackle for Notre Dame? Or LSU, sorry.
I think it was,
LSU. I mean, I think he was the first one to ever start at left tackle as a true freshman for LSU.
This is happens with like elite prospects when they're this good for 3 years. You're just like, okay, who's next? Who else can we talk about? Because it gets boring to talk about the same guys for 3 years, but you can't forget just how good these guys have been. And I think it's happening in Calvin Banks Jr. right now. And listen, Membu's phenomenal. I'm not denying that, but he's a guy who broke out this year, right? He's a guy who came out of nowhere and became his elite prospect. Banks has been this way his entire career. And I think there's a little bit of fatigue going on with him. And like I said, the arm length, yes, is below average. The wingspan is 82nd percentile. So no problem with the wingspan right there, which I think is more important than arm length for tackles. So I love Calvin Banks Jr., man. I think he's getting a little too disrespected, I think, in this draft right now. I think he is absolutely worthy of a top 10 pick, and I think San Francisco or Miami at 11 or 13, they should sprint that card in if he's available, because I think he would be a fantastic player for them. That wraps up our top 10 offensive linemen in the draft. Dalton, you wanted to shout out one more guy, the top center, true center in this draft, Jared Wilson. You and I both love this guy. Real quick, tell me a little bit about Jared Wilson.
I was sick leaving him out. I think if I have Trapillo, say, at 11, I think I have Wilson at 12, and I think he's going to be a really good player. I think you're going to get several teams in, maybe even in the late second, but probably early third round, looking at teams that need a center. I think about the Jacksonville Jaguars, right? I think he'd be a great fit there. Showed off his athleticism at the combine too, and only 1 year as a starter at Georgia, but he was fantastic all year. I think he's somebody with a relatively high ceiling. I think for being only a 1 year starter, he's very well taught at the position. There's a little bit more to polish, but Jared Wilson's a guy. It really hurt me that I couldn't get him into this top 10, just because it's just, again, you're looking at a 1 year breakout guy and a 1 year starter. But I think as a true center, and a guy who we know for a fact is going to play center, you could argue him as the best one and the safest pick at that spot.
Honestly, I think he is by a mile the best true center in this draft. So of the guys who actually played center in college, who's the best center prospect in the draft, I think by a mile it's Jared Wilson. After that, might be what, Jonah Monheim from USC is probably the next one.
Monheim, I mean, Seth McLaughlin's coming off an torn Achilles. I mean, it's just, it feels like we're going to talk about this next year. All the most of the really great centers.
Oh, yeah.
They went back to college. But we're going to talk a lot about centers next year.
It's loaded. It's loaded at center.
You have Parker Brailsford. You have Jake
Logan Jones.
Logan Jones. Jake Slaughter, your guy. Gardner from Colorado State, too, could be a thing. But, no, I mean, it's a thin center class, and this is in part why we're talking about Will Campbell and, say, Gray Zabel moving inside to center. But if you want a guy, I think, in the third round who could be a day one starter at that spot, it's Jared Wilson. Because what was it? Cedric Van Pren Granger was talking about him, and he's like, "Oh, he's better than me." That's right.
Yeah. And Van Pren was awesome.
He was a fifth round pick, I think. Buffalo took him in the fifth, and he's like, "Oh no, Jared's better than me. Just watch." And hell, he might be right.
Yeah, absolutely. And as mentioned, the 2026 center class, you got Jake Slaughter. You got Yapani Lalulu from Oregon. Mm. He played center for them this year. Logan Jones went back to school. Connor Liu from Auburn's a really good player as well. Parker Brailsford, you mentioned before.
2026 is the year of the center.
Man, it is loaded at center next year. If you're wondering why is the center class so bad this year, well, it's because there are a lot of fantastic centers.
We did this with running backs this past cycle, right? Last year was like, just wait, we're getting there. If you need a center, just wait.
It's a loaded center class next year, but of the guys who are actually true centers who are not have to change positions to play center in the NFL, Jared Wilson is the best guy. And I think both of us agree he's worth probably a day two pick in the NFL draft. So good shout out there, because I do also love Jared Wilson. He's my next highest ranked interior offensive lineman in the draft. But that wraps up our top 10 offensive linemen in the draft. Let us know in the comments below who you think are the top 10 offensive linemen. Who do we miss out on? Who are you a little bit higher on? Who are you a bit lower on in this draft? We want to get all your opinions in the comments below. But we got plenty more videos coming out surrounding the 2025 NFL draft and surrounding, of course, the 2025 college football season as well. So subscribe to the channel so you don't miss a single one of those videos. For producer Eli back there, for Dalton Wassman, I'm Max Chadwick. We'll see you guys very, very soon.